Hello, everyone. You are listening to the John and Joe Show podcast. My name is John Kerr, publisher of the Kerr Report newsletter. I am joined now by the Joe portion of the John and Joe Show, proud Mundelein Mustang, Northern Illinois Husky, Daily Herald alum, and host for Ultimate Autographs. Break the box, Joe Aguilar.
Hey, you got it. Nice intro, John Kerr. Thank you, bud. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Doing well, breaking boxes of memorabilia at Ultimate Autographs, still working in the toy department, being the ex-sports writer I am. So it's all good. Sun's out. People are wearing shorts and flip-flops because it's above 36 degrees, and we're all good, right?
Yeah, I tell you, our guest here might have some interest in some memorabilia if it involves the St. Louis Cardinals. So we're excited to have on our show the assistant executive director of the Illinois High School Association and St. Louis Cardinal fan, as I just teased earlier. His name is Sam Knox. Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm great, John and Joe. Thanks for having me.
So if you could, if you know, Joe's one of those guys, just real quick before we get to the content of the show, where they break the boxes on these memorabilia shows. And if there was something in one of those boxes that would be the most valuable thing for you, Sam, what would that be?
Well, I am a diehard Cardinals fan, as you said, but my all-time sports idol is John Elway.
Really?
When I was a kid in the 80s and they were really good going to Super Bowls and then getting not too positive results in those first three Super Bowls, I fell in love with the Broncos and John Elway. I played quarterback in high school. He was my guy. So if you come across any Elway memorabilia, I'm actually reading his biography right now. My wife got it for me for Christmas. So
really,
he's my all-time sports idol.
We actually did have a John Elway helmet that someone won. It was what they call an amp helmet, where it's like an exaggerated decal on the helmet. NFL teams don't wear these helmets. They're just kind of, you know, for memorabilia collectors. But the logos were so big on the sides that he signed it on the crown, John Elway. And it was, as the young kids say, it was dope. It was really cool. It was really cool. Even all the non-Bears, you know, and all the Bears fans, rather, in the room were like, wow, that is cool. It's John Elway helmet. So
yeah, and
sometimes you get in the room were like, that just blows everybody away.
Yeah, Sam, and a guy who went out on top, right? I mean, you can't win a back-to-back Super Bowls, right? So that's the way you want to kind of end your career. So, well, Sam, wanted to have you on here to talk specifically about what's happening here in the state of Illinois and the return to play. And we're well into basketball season at this point. Now the calendar's turning to March, and we have football starting up next week. We're recording this on February 24th. Football starts, practices March 3rd, games March 19th. Then we got wrestling and everything that's going to happen here in the next couple of months. Tell us currently right now, how much in communication are you with the Illinois Department of Public Health, and what are kind of the most pressing questions that you have right now in regards to return to play?
Well, John, I wish I could say that communication with the IDPH has been great. We've been frustrated at times because of the lack of communication, but we know as well as our schools are, the IHSA, the IESA, the State Board of Education, the IDPH, we're all trying to figure this out as we go, having never been down roads like this before. But communication is there, not daily certainly, but you know, when we ask questions, they do get back to us. And then we share that information with our member schools. But some of the top questions we've asked them recently are centered around football, because that's the next big season going to be starting up here next Wednesday. And people are concerned about the current spectator limit. The IDPH currently says that it's a maximum of 50 spectators, at indoor or outdoor events. And a lot of questions center around that, and going, have you seen our football field? Have you seen our bleachers? Even small school football, where people just kind of stand around the fence and don't sit in the bleachers. They feel that, you know, we could comfortably put many more than 50 people at a football game. So we're waiting on an answer for that. The other piece is related to individual players. They're saying that kids, when they cannot be socially distant, have to wear a face mask, that, you know, many similar to the mask that we wear in public or the kids wear at school. In football, it's really hard to be socially distant when you're playing the game or scrimmaging in practice. Now, in practice, if you're practicing punt returns or kick returns or throwing passes to one-on-one kids. You can be pretty socially distant in those situations. But the concern about wearing masks while you're playing football are, how's a kid going to wear a mouthpiece in his mouth and a mask over that, where many of our kids' mouthpieces are connected to their face mask or their helmet? Not all, but, you know, that's not a rule. They have to be, but most of them leave them that way just so they don't lose the mouthpiece, of course. The other part is from officials. How are we supposed to look at a kid and tell if he has a mouthpiece in? Because that's a rule. You've got to wear a mouthpiece in high school. If you've got a mask over your face, how do we know if Joe or John or Mike or whoever has a mouthpiece in? So challenging questions there. We've asked those questions of the IDPH to help us with those and several other football and other sports related questions as those seasons are right around the corner.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're still waiting for answers. I mean, and it's go time. You mentioned it's next Wednesday. Teams are allowed to get on the practice field and go. What, how much has to get done here by next Wednesday? And what kind of, how much are you being inundated, I guess, by high school coaches all around the state, throughout the state, saying what's going on and how should we proceed here?
Yeah, those are good questions, Joe. I compared it this way the other day. It feels like when I walk into the office in the morning, someone has dumped a 5-gallon bucket of emails on my desk. And then after I get those first few answered, someone turns on a fire hose of emails and just keeps going all day long till 4:30. The questions are good. They're coming from all over the state, big schools, small schools, everything in between. Parents, athletic directors, coaches, principals, officials, they all want to know. In a normal school year, it's very comforting to know when they contact the IHSA, and they ask questions about game times or playoff ticket prices or where's the state finals going to be, we always have solid concrete answers for them. This year, it's very uncomfortable because we don't always have solid concrete answers for all of this because it always seems to be changing. And I use the old line sometimes, just when we think we have it all figured out, something changes. And usually, lately, it's been changing for the positive. So changing for the positive, think back to a little over a month ago in mid-January when we all kind of went, well, I guess we're not going to have a basketball season. I guess we're not going to have a football season. And then soon after that, the governor goes on TV in a press conference and announces that schools can now start playing some sports. And it was, hooray, we're excited, let's go. But as we go with this, there's a lot of questions that pop up that, again, we've never been here before, but we're trying to cooperate with the IDPH to get those solid, concrete answers for our schools. And they're about as solid and concrete as they can be until they might change a few days later. So it's hold on tight till the end of June this school year.
Yeah, I think sometimes people forget that. I mean, they expect answers from you, the IHSA, that is immediately and thoroughly. But it's not like there's a manual written on how to deal with high school sports during a pandemic. And you guys are figuring it out, like pretty much all of us. We're all day to day, week to week, trying to figure things out here with our jobs and workplaces, et cetera. I don't know if you can handicap this, Sam, but what are the odds do you think of we start on time Wednesday with at least practicing? And we know some more guidelines as far as in particular with the face masks.
I think the odds are really good that we will start practices on Wednesday. Schools are ready to go and they know they can do that. And keep in mind that, you know, schools can certainly practice and do things locally. Kids can wear masks under their helmets in practice, probably a little more safely than they can during a game. So those game questions might not be answered till we're a few days into the practice portion of the season. And our main question has been to the IDPH is we really feel like everybody on the sideline, coaches, chain crew, statisticians, media, substitutes on the bench, all those folks can wear a mask. We've been doing it for many months. It's not a big deal. But the 22 players who are on the field, we really feel like it for safety reasons, and our sports medicine advisory committee agrees with this, for safety reasons, it's probably best if those 22 players on the field do not wear a mask while they're out there playing. And when they come to the sideline, take their helmet off, you know, pull up a gaiter or pull on a mask, just like we've seen on TV through with the NFL and college. And that seems to have worked very well for them. Now, don't get me wrong, we don't certainly have the level of testing that big-time colleges or the NFL has. Some schools do locally, but many, many don't, and they rely on their county health department for that. So high school world's a little bit different than what we see on TV, but we still feel like the kids on the field can play safely without a mask on their face.
Good. Good to hear that.
Yeah, our guest is Sam Knox. He is Assistant Executive Director with the Illinois High School Association. Sam's specific responsibilities are officials. He also serves on Athletic Directors Advisory Committee, but sports, football, wrestling, and baseball. But we're talking about football here, as that's the sport that's coming up. And historically, there's never been a spring football season in Illinois. And so that's also part of this is, again, I know, Sam, this is not so much your issue, but the field space and trying to, I mean, just being an athletic director and trying to figure all this out and looking outside and still seeing all the snow on the ground, at least up in this area, which is, you know, in the Chicagoland area, and figuring all that out. And Sam, that's one thing I want to ask you about as it relates to some of these guidelines and protocols, specifically also about basketball, since that is current. Based on the Illinois Department of Public Health mitigations for phase four schools, which allows you to play games within a certain region, but you have to play certain games, there is a stipulation there that states 50 spectators is allowable. I've gone to four games and I don't see 50 fans there. I see schools, you know, doing a typically what they do is a two ticket allotment per varsity roster, or if it's a sophomore game, it's two tickets per family member of that roster player. I don't see schools even allowing the 50 allotment at this time. To me, that is a worrisome trend, and that's why people, when they see the same mitigations outline for outdoor sports, which hasn't changed yet, right? Is this going to be adjusted? How much counseling or advice do you give to schools about how they specifically handle or interpret those Illinois Department of Public Health guidelines? I mean, should schools allow 50? I mean, why are they allowing 25 or 30? Why not go to 50?
Yeah, good question, John. It's not been weekly recently, but for a while there, it was a weekly meeting with the Illinois Athletic Directors Association through Zoom, just like we're talking with you and Joe here. And we would have hundreds of ADs from all over the state join a Zoom meeting with Craig Anderson, our director, and some of our staff, including me. And we would try to interpret what the IDPH and what the State Board of Education are saying about what we can do. And we would lay out to the best of our ability what those guidelines say. And just like you mentioned, the guidelines say a maximum of 50 spectators at an event. Keep in mind, though, that our schools, even with our IHSA bylaws, for example, eligibility bylaws, our minimum eligibility is you have to pass five classes from the previous semester to be eligible for the following semester. Schools can be more restrictive than that if they choose to on the local level. Some schools go beyond five classes for eligibility. Some say you have to pass six. Some say you have to have a certain grade point average. Some might say everybody takes seven classes here and you have to pass them all. So though you can be more restrictive. So what I'm getting to is, even though the spectator limit is 50, if a certain school doesn't feel comfortable allowing that many people into a gym for whatever event, they can certainly be more restrictive and only allow, you know, certain X number of passes per student, which might total up to 25 or 30 total fans. We've heard from some schools who just simply they're not dealing with spectators at all, and they're saying no fans. In fact, I've refereed a few basketball games this year in gyms where it just feels like the atmosphere feels like a practice, basically. It's the kids, the coaches, the officials, and a couple people at the score table, and that's about it.
Yeah, so that's up to the school. That's not anything the IHSA is involved with there. I mean, the rules are there, the guidelines are there. So it's up to the individual schools and or their school districts, I guess.
Correct. Yeah, we lay out the expectations or the guidelines from our office, from the IDPH, and then schools really handle that locally. I mean, they have very well-educated people who know their communities and their school well, from superintendent, principals, athletic directors, and coaches, and they handle those locally just like they do in a normal school year.
You mentioned refereeing high school basketball. I know you've done that, and you do baseball as well. You umpire, correct, Sam?
Correct.
What's it been like for you as an official, away from your all the hats you wear for the IHSA, but working as a state official? I know there's been a shortage for referees for a long time now. You know, participation has been on the decline for a long time. Were there any concerns you had just individually, not wearing your IHSA hat, about going back to refereeing, wearing a mask? What kind of feedback have you heard from your officials, brethren about dealing, officiating during these times?
Yeah, I personally didn't have too many concerns about officiating. Back in the fall when junior high baseball was going strong, I umpired quite a few junior high baseball games and felt comfortable doing that with some of the COVID mitigations that were in place for that. When we got to start up the basketball season, a lot of basketball officials, they had their normal dates on their calendars, and we got to early to mid-January, and we were kind of like, well, we'll start deleting games because these aren't going to happen. And then all of a sudden, a switch flipped, and over that one weekend when games started, our schedules filled up really, really fast. And most officials are going 4, 5, 6 nights a week to help schools cover all the games because schools want to play, and you've got all levels from freshmen to varsity, girls and boys, junior high games mixed in there as well. Trying to cover all those games is a challenge. And, our initial position was going to be that officials, while they're actively running up and down the court, aren't required to wear a mask. We're talking guys that are in their 50s, 60s, some guys are in their 70s running up and down a court, probably not healthy for them to do that. But when we started games, many of our school administrators noticed that the officials weren't wearing a mask and said, wait a minute, if everybody in the school is wearing a mask, why aren't the referees? So that's when the IDPH said, oh, everybody, including officials, have to wear a mask. So there were some early concerns about that. How do I blow a whistle? How do I wear a mask? And I'll admit, it took a couple quarters in my very first game to get comfortable and used to it. But now we're used to it. And I had a game last night. I've got a game tonight. It's just a thing we do now to help kids enjoy playing basketball. We have had quite a few officials have said, hey, if I'm going to have to wear a mask, I'm out. I'm not doing it this year. I'm going to take a year off. I might get back in the groove next year if things are more back to normal. And we totally respect that. Everybody has to do what's best for him or her. Some people have serious COVID concerns, maybe certain health risks in their personally or in their family. They just don't want to risk it this year. We totally understand that. We'll welcome those officials back whenever they're ready to join us again. And if I can use just a few seconds here for a quick plug, you mentioned we have had a lower number of officials in recent years. And that's a trend nationwide. That's not just an Illinois issue. Mm-hmm. So if I can say, if anybody's listening or paying attention to your podcast, for your faithful listeners who are interested in becoming an official or have ever had that thought of maybe I should get into volleyball or maybe I should be a wrestling or whatever sport they like, bring them on. We're a phone call or an email away. They can register through our website. Our schools need officials now more than they have before to help kids do what they love to do.
Well, I would ask you just as a follow-up to that, and we know a lot of the reasons why there's the decline. This is just me speaking. You could speak to this better than I can, certainly, but the amount of abuse officials take from parents is off the charts. It gets worse every year. And I always, when I've watched games in the past, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, I always think there's no way I could do this job. I don't care how much you pay me because I would probably just lose it one time with a parent. What is it so rewarding for you as an official? And how do you, if someone's listening saying, I don't know, I'm thinking about it, but I don't know if I'll do it. What would you say to sell that person on, hey, you're missing out here and this might be for you even though you don't realize it?
Yeah, it is. It's rewarding it for everybody in a different way. Some officials are just rewarded because being in that high school atmosphere, and I'll admit that I'm one of those people. I mean, you guys know you can't beat the atmosphere of a gym full of people in a normal school year. Right. Gym full of people for a boys or girls basketball game, whether it's a conference game, whether it's senior night. There's just something that just, gets you going about that gym full of people and the atmosphere at a high school basketball game. That's fun. As I get older, and I've got my own 3 children in high school right now, as an official, you get to be a role model of sorts. Those kids in the game really don't know you, but they look up to you and hopefully respect you as an official to help them get through that game. You get to help lots and lots of kids. Again, kids that you don't know, help them enjoy their high school experience. I'm sure you guys played some sports back in the day. I did too. We all relied on the officials to help us get through those games and learn the rules and play with sportsmanship and all that good stuff. It's fun to be on that side of the whistle and help kids through those experiences as well. But I've said for many years now, I talked earlier about the 5-gallon bucket of email and the fire hose of emails and phone calls that come every day. Officiating is my getaway time. It really is. You get out there on the court for an hour and a half or 2 hours. Nobody's calling you. Nobody's emailing you. The problems kind of go away, and you focus on just that game and doing the very best you can for those kids and those coaches. And yeah, you hear the chirping from the bleachers. You're always going to hear that. But you can't bark back at them. You just, you know, keep going along with the rules that you know and calling the best game you can. But I really enjoy everybody has their hobbies. Some people fish. Some people golf. Some people gamble. Some people collect autograph memorabilia and open boxes. everybody has their hobbies, right? And some of us nutty people in the world, our hobbies are officiating high school sports and junior high sports. And it's really a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a great answer.
Yeah, Joe, I when you really think about it, if you look at the ability to be able to connect with your community and really provide a service, you know, I've talked about this with officiating, but I can't think of anything better than that. I mean, certainly there's certainly volunteer work, and there's plenty of things you can do within your community to make it a better place. But I just think, I mean, you can't have youth or even at the youth level. I mean, right, officiating feeder games, right? As a youth coach myself, starting at that level, you know, and recruiting them to where they're in an environment, right, that is maybe not as competitive. But I would think that would be a thing, Sam, is breaking down some of these stigmas that are attached to officiating, which might be fans, coaches, you know, screaming coaches. Well, look, we know that doesn't really happen. This is not Bobby Knight era anymore. Most people are respectful. Right. Is there competitive games? Are guys forceful with you? Yeah, of course they are. Right. But you've got a relationship with these guys and they respect you and that sort of thing. I just think is there a target market? I mean, are you looking at guys that are kind of in that middle age bracket that are retired? They're looking for something to do extra with their time. Is it recruiting younger people into the profession so they can do it as you said, a hobby? Or is the struggle just trying to find that demographic that you think really fits what you guys can do?
Yeah, we've got the whole spectrum of the demographics. We've got those kids who, I'll say kids, young people who maybe played a sport in high school or college, and they want to use officiating as a way to stay involved in that sport. And that's great. When you're 20, 25 years old, that's fantastic. But we have the people on the other end of the spectrum too, who hear from several folks who are suddenly empty nesters. Their kids went through high school, played some sports. The parents went and sat in the bleachers to support their kids and really fell in love with a certain sport that maybe mom or dad didn't even play that sport in high school, but they really connected with it when their kid was playing that sport. And now their child is off in college or beyond college. And they go, you know, I kind of miss volleyball. I kind of miss softball, baseball, track and field, whatever. How can I get involved? And officiating is a great way for those folks who are maybe late 40s or 50s or even in their 60s to give, like you said, give back to the community and kind of a nice side as well, is that you get paid. This is a hobby where you get paid. A lot of hobbies, you spend money to do those hobbies, like fishing and golf and the other things I mentioned earlier. But in officiating, yeah, you've got to spend some money. You buy gas and you buy some food. You got to buy your equipment and your whistles and your pants and your shoes and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, they give you a check when you leave. So that's kind of nice too.
And you also get a great workout. I mean, I know some officials don't get up and down the court as quickly as some other guys, but for the most part, I mean, you're running up and down a court, even if you're jogging or trying to run, it's a pretty good workout too. So there's that to it too, which that would probably be the one reason why I would officiate, is like to get some exercise and running up and down, even if I only touch the ball during a stoppages in play. So.
Our guest is Sam Knox, your assistant executive director of the Illinois High School Association. We're talking to Sam about return to play, specifically football, a little bit of basketball, and also the state of officiating in the state of Illinois. Sam is an official himself on top of all of his duties with the IHSA. And Sam, I want to go back to current sports and football and even wrestling. I know that's something that, that you are also in charge of. I think what's maddening for fans and parents and athletes are the inconsistencies in regards to how health guidelines are interpreted. We had a conversation a few minutes ago about mask wearing and how still we don't know yet how that's going to play out. And you and I had an email exchange about splash shields, right? Which I had gotten some direct messages and emails from parents asking about that. Hey, would this be a substitute as opposed to wearing a mask? And you said currently with the interpretations, no, that would not be because it doesn't touch the face, right? The mask touches the face as opposed to a splash shield. Wrestling, my understanding currently with wrestling, which also I think starts on April 19th, right? So that is going to be later in the calendar, is that wrestlers don't have to wear masks during competition, right? Is that correct? So people wondering, well, how the heck can a wrestler not? And we understand why. I mean, logically and rationally, you can't, like Joe, you and I said, you have to stop the match every 2 seconds because the mask could be falling out because of the close contact with them. But wrestling is considered a high-risk sport. Football is considered a high-risk sport by the risk classifications by the IDPH. So why wear a mask in football where there's minimal contact one-on-one, maybe for a second or two, yet wrestling is for 3 minutes? Why is that?
Yeah, you mentioned the word maddening, and I'll admit this can get quite maddening for our staff as well, just because of the very reasons you just said. You know, for many weeks, we were under the impression, and the IDPH had said, all wrestlers have to wear a mask while they're in competition. And then just recently, they changed their position on that, thankfully, and said, you know, when kids are stretching or jogging or maybe doing some drills against air, so to speak, like they do in wrestling, they need to wear a mask. But when they're actively one-on-one on the mat in practice, doing drills or in competition, they're not required to wear a mask. And we're grateful for that. We're really glad. But you mentioned the sport of football as well, where, yeah, there's contact in football. But as you said, it's for a few seconds at the most. And very rarely do kids play every play in the entire game. Some 1 and 2A schools, they do. But most schools up near you, they don't. They're specialists on offense, defense. Very rarely do kids play both ways at the big schools. Their contact is much more minimal than it is in wrestling. So we'll see where that goes. Again, we've asked those questions of the IDPH. We're hopeful for some positive replies soon so we can share that with our schools and get football season started here shortly.
Sam, I wanted to ask you about the schedule for the rest of this school year regarding whether it's football or the spring sports, baseball, softball, et cetera, track. Is that still fluid? Excuse me. I know the season, what right now is extended until what, mid-June, I think it is, for some of those spring sports. Even football, is there a chance we could see that go to 7 weeks or maybe 8 weeks? Can we stretch? How firm is the IHSA as far as scheduling? And is there still some flexibility there going forward?
Yeah, good question, Joe. We've told people from day one, way back in July, I guess, that the two keywords this year are patience and flexibility. And boy, have our schools and parents been very flexible, and we're grateful for that. We feel like going forward from this point till the end of the school year, things are getting more firm. They're maybe not quite as flexible as they were back before Christmas. But to answer your question about football, I don't see it going any farther than a 6-week season, which ends on the weekend of April 23rd and 24th. I don't see it going farther than that because schools are already concerned about the overlap on the front end of football season with kids who are wrapping up basketball and trying to get their required days of practice in to play a football game. And then on the back end of the football season with overlap with track and field and baseball and maybe boys tennis or whatever other sports happen in the spring, they're concerned about the overlap for those kids and maybe putting too much on a teenager to try to make all those ends meet with multiple sports. We love multi-sport athletes. I know you guys do as well. I was a 3-sport athlete in high school. My kids participate in a lot of different sports, so we know the values of those. But in this unique school year, we want to be very careful not to push those kids too far to try to handle all that responsibility trying to do all their sports here in a short window of time. So our school year originally was going to end the weekend of June 25 and 26, and that's when we planned to do that. But we heard from a lot of schools who said, ooh, it just doesn't feel right. We're concerned about going that deep into June, family vacations and kids going off on their travel teams for softball and baseball and other things that come up in the summer. Where will all of our kids still want to stay with us all the way till June 26th and finish the high school season? So our board of directors pulled that back a week, and now we're ending most of our stuff in the spring on June 19th. And again, I don't see that going farther than that, simply because at some point we have to end this school year and then start and look forward to the next school year. So June 19th is the finish line for most of our spring sports this year.
Well, Sam, hey, appreciate the time, and this is really, really great content and really kind of clearing up some things as best as you can. Again, I know that all roads, as we've been dealing with since last year, or certainly the summer of 2020 when the fall sports were beginning, it's again, IDPH, the governor's office, waiting to hear back, and that's, I know, as you said, that can be maddening for everybody involved. But before we let you go, I have a question about that, because I think this is, it points to people's understanding of what the IHSA actually does. And I know we're on Zoom here, and you're smiling as I ask that question. And maybe that's just a real simple question. I mean, I'll add some context to it, because if you look back at what's happened here over the last several months, the IHSA has come under a lot of criticism for not doing enough and saying, why are they not standing up to the governor or the IDPH? Why did they, let's just say, secede authority to the IDPH back in July when you were heading into the fall season and with football? And then you attempted to disobey the governor, right? When basketball happened. Excuse me, I'm trying to get the timeline in my head as I'm saying this, and that didn't happen because the schools didn't go along with it, because liability, getting insurance. So, is it criticism fair, I guess, in terms of what the IHSA has done in their role in this, or help clear that up and help us understand that this is our role and this is our lane and we're sticking to it.
Yeah. The basics of what the IHSA does is, people have to remember, our staff here in Bloomington is, we've got, when everybody's here and it's a normal school year, we've got approximately 25 people in our office. And there are about 10 of us who are sport administrators, and we're responsible for overseeing everything from cross country, swimming and diving, chess, speech, Scholastic Bowl, and wrestling and football and everything in between. And we work with our schools on that. The IHSA was formed over 100 years ago by a group of high school principals who wanted to formulate some common rules and some common groundwork and some common bylaws that everybody played by the same rules. So the IHSA has been around for over 100 years. Our schools are still in charge of the IHSA. Our staff here in Bloomington is just, we're hired by those schools to oversee sports and activities, and we do that to the best of our ability. This year has been challenging, no doubt. We try to partner with other groups, from the State Board of Education to State Department of Public Health. Excuse me, my train of thought is all over the place today, but the IDPH, ISB, and other groups who have a hand in educating students, thousands of kids all over the state. And I often say, we're all in the kid business, and we're trying to do what's best for thousands of kids. Is some of the criticism fair? Perhaps. We've never been down this road before, and we didn't really know what we were getting into when, almost a year ago in mid-March, when whole pandemic kind of rolled out and we all changed our way of living. None of us had ever been here before. And we tried to hang on to those spring sports last year as long as we could, hoping we might be able to come out and play again in softball and baseball and everything else. But ultimately, and unfortunately, we couldn't. We had questions from parents for everything from, can my kid have a fifth year of eligibility? She already graduated. Can she come back for another year because she really loves to play softball or she really loves to run track? Can she come back and play again? Unfortunately, the answer was no, because our schools have developed bylaws that cover that and say, once you start high school, You only get 4 years to participate in sports. And once you've graduated, your time is done in high school. It's time to move on. So those were tough conversations to have as well. But, you know, as everybody's trying to get through this, as parents, as kids, as teachers and coaches, we here at the IHSA are trying our best every day to communicate with a lot of people and answer a lot of questions, not really knowing where this is all going to end up. I kind of equated it to this. We were going down roads we'd never been before, and we were literally drawing the map as we drove down those unknown roads. That's a really, really uncomfortable feeling. So have we hit the target every time? No. Have we tried our best to hit the target every time? Certainly, yes. So maybe some of that criticism is justified, but a lot of it is we're doing our best to help a lot of kids play the sports and activities that they love to do. And even with limited seasons, we're getting some really good feedback right now from some parents, some schools who are saying, hey, we know it's been a rough year. We totally understand the IHSA is in a very, very difficult position, but thank you for all you've done. We're really glad our kids are back playing sports. It doesn't feel quite normal, but we're so glad kids are doing that because we've all seen it. I've seen it in my house with my kids, the changes in attitudes and just, you know, that feeling of looking forward to going to school and the homecoming activities and the games coming up and the bus rides and all that fun stuff. That hasn't happened for these kids in a long, long time. And we want to get back to normal as quickly as we can, but also as safely as we can. So we're plowing ahead. We know there's better days coming, and we're going to work with as many groups as we can to get kids back where they belong, loving life, doing school and sports, and having a good time doing it in a safe environment.
Yeah, you know, I think all of us, great answer, Sam. I mean, we all of us, no matter our profession, have wanted lots of answers, a lot of questions answered in the last 11 months here. And the reality is, we don't know, a lot of us. And a lot of companies, even as big as the IHSA, just don't know. Maybe that's not the correct answer, but it's the truth. I think people have to understand that we're all going through this together for the first time. And sometimes you just don't have the answer. And when you make mistakes, at what company could say we haven't made any mistakes in the last 11 months as far as how we handle things? Probably every company has made mistakes. But you hope some people just understand a little more. And I think you've been a great guest here for a lot of levels. Not only your roles with the IHSA, but being an official, being a parent of three kids in high school. Three in high school, did you say?
That's right. We have boy-girl twins who are juniors, and then we have a sophomore boy. So
that's a busy house.
It's a very busy house, yeah.
So you understand, I think, on all levels, and you have empathy, which I think we can clearly tell during this interview. So I want to thank you again. Really appreciate your time here and some really terrific answers. And we'll just keep plowing forward, I guess, right? One day at a time. There's no, you know, 1 month. It's really one day at a time. And hopefully things work out here, and let's get some football going next week, hopefully.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks for having me, John and Joe, and keep up the good work, spreading the good word about high school sports. And, you know, we all love this arena. You know, sure, we like watching professional and college sports on television, and heck, these days we're watching high school sports on television through the NFHS Network or YouTube or whatever. You know, when things get back to normal, I know thousands of people in Illinois and millions of people nationwide can't wait to get back to going to the local high school game on a Friday night or Saturday afternoon, watching kids compete, buying a bag of popcorn, talking with neighbors about how life's going, and just getting back to enjoying life the way we all love it.
Sam, one quick thing I'm reminded before I do let you go is any possibility of a state series for any of the summer sports? I mean, for baseball, track, softball, is that still on the table?
Yes, those are still on the table. We're not completely sure yet what those might look like. You know, right now, if we are limited to 50 spectators at an outdoor event, just quite honestly, it's going to be really difficult to run state series. As most of you know, our funding model is based on postseason ticket sales. Over 70% of our revenue at the IHSA comes from postseason ticket sales. That's everything from the first game of the regional all the way through to the state championship game. Keep in mind, we haven't had that for almost a year. Looking back to last school year, we did finish the girls' basketball season. We did finish the wrestling season. But boys basketball, of course, was stopped short of the state finals. So we did get some revenue from those regionals and sectionals there. But what company can keep going forward if it doesn't have revenue for almost a year? So that's concerning to us. Do we roll out a plan? Do we play the games? One of our biggest expenses is paying officials. Those umpires and officials who work our postseason games, our office pays those folks from the ticket sales we get. If we're limited to selling 50 tickets at an event, there's not much profit margin there, so to speak. And we're not in this to make money, but as you guys know, money makes it all happen. We can't do this without money. So we do have some rough draft plans now that we plan to share with our board of directors in March about what track and field might look like, or boys tennis, et cetera, in the spring. And do we want to do those? Absolutely. We want to do those. That's why we're here, to help kids have those state finals experiences. But we want to be very careful too, watching the financial piece. If we can do this financially and make it all work, then let's go 100 miles an hour. Let's make it happen. But those will be board of directors' decisions as we go down this road.
And Sam, is a decision about the spectators, a raise on that 50 cap. When would you need to have that answer? To, again, as you said before, the timing of this doesn't always line up with when you need to make these decisions, right? You plan and then, okay, we got to pull back and plan again. I suppose, and certainly with football games starting on February, on March 19th, you certainly would like to have an answer by then, right? So you could have more than 50 spectators. But is there a time frame to say, let's say it's, you don't hear back until, let's say it's 50 spectators until May. And then you finally hear back and they say, yep, you can go 25% capacity or whatever it is. Would you still be able to have a state series?
Yeah, that timeline question is a really good one. And that's our primary concern, is if our board rolls out a plan and says, here's what we're going to do for our spring sports in June. We can have a state series in these events. Or decides not to have a state series because we can only have 50 people. Well, if schools plan and go ahead and schedule games and say, well, I guess we're not having a state series in baseball this year, but we find out sometime in May, well, now you can have X number of spectators at an event, more than 50. Well, when is it too late to go to plan B or plan C to make a state series happen? Some schools by then might say, heck with it. We're just going to play out the season and play a little local conference tournament at the end and call it a day. Others might say, no, we want to have regionals and sectionals and a state championship like normal. So the timeline is probably the million-dollar question right now, John, is how does this all shake out timeline-wise when we don't know what the timeline is going to look like? I don't know if you up north there, if you follow the Illinois Elementary School Association, some of your schools probably do participate in IESA postseason events. But think back to last August, I believe. The IESA came out and said, well, softball and baseball seasons are canceled. And then a few days later, the IDPH said, well, you can play baseball and softball. So then they had to reverse course really fast and say, okay, schools, now you can play baseball and softball, but we're not going to have a state championship. So we certainly don't want to go down that road. We want to plan the best we can. So our board of directors is in a tough spot, no doubt, making those tough decisions.
Hey, Sam, great stuff. Really appreciate your time this morning. And all the best going forward, not only with what's going on with the IHSA, but your family and officiating and everything else. We appreciate it.
Yeah, Joe and John, thanks. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it. Hey, and thanks, Sam. Let's make sure you even out those charge and block calls tonight, okay?
We still hear the common phrase, call it both ways.
Never hear that, right?
I've never heard that.
Joe, in all your years of never heard that from a parent. But, of course, there's only, 50 people in the stands down there? So you can hear them a lot louder probably now, right? Maybe underneath the mask and everything. But, all right. All right, Jen. Thanks again, all right? And go Cubs. All right, thanks.
Be well. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, I kind of muted Sam there a little bit before he could respond, to the – he's a Cardinal fan, living down there in Southern Illinois, of course. So, but, Joe, we got that last question there with Sam, just to kind of a little bit of news there about the state series. And I couldn't remember if that was still on the table or not, or what Craig Anderson had said in a various press conference. But overall, I think – just, again, good information from Sam. Not a lot that he can share right now about what's going to happen here in terms of football regarding spectators and the mask-wearing issue. But I think he's confident that we'll start on time here on March 3rd, and the season will begin on March 19th, even if there's 30 people there, which would be ridiculous. But at least that the season will start on time.
Right, and at least they have some time, although practices look like they're going to start for sure. Who knows? But I mean, pretty confident practice will start on time next Wednesday. And then you have 2 weeks to figure out the other stuff. As far, I mean, who knows? It could be a game time decision, John, as far as how they're going to handle the mask wearing. I think we'll know before then. But right now, I mean, they still don't have an answer on that. But it's all valid questions. And you know, every high school football coach and kid and parent is wondering the same thing.
I think it depends on who you talk to, Joe, about that. I think there are some coaches who are just like, hey, be grateful to play. We'll figure this stuff out. Kids are kind of used to it. Sure. But football and mask wearing, no. I mean, I don't think – kids haven't played football. You know, if you're in high school, you haven't played it since October of last year. And, you know, and all the other equipment you have to put on. Basketball, you throw the mask on, okay, it drops below the nose. You hear the referees saying, hey, masks up after the timeout. Kids have been playing travel basketball. They're kind of used to that. The football aspect to me is different, again, because you get so much stuff on with the helmets and the masks and everything else. And there's little ramp-up time. I mean, you're talking about getting kids ready to play a sport in the span of 2 weeks that they haven't really – they've been maybe doing training or one-on-one type stuff, but not actual contact, you know, bringing kids to the ground with mouthpieces and masks. Again, these types – again – I know there are plenty of coaches that are going like, hey, we'll figure it out, whatever it is. But these are legitimate questions and concerns as a parent certainly would have, you know, for their child.
Well, another thing, too, is, I mean, officials, especially during a football game, have enough – well, during a basketball game, too, have enough to watch and look for, even during timeouts. Now you're going to ask an official, your crew is responsible for checking – All 22 players on the field after every play and during every play and after. I mean, how can you monitor that? And then, you know, how many masks are falling below the nose, which is the improper way to wear a mask? It's hard to believe 11 months into this, people still don't know how to wear a mask properly. But with high school athletes, I can't tell you, John, how many pictures I've seen on Twitter and in newspapers of kids like game action and the mask is like below their nose or down around their neck. I mean, what's the point of this at some point? I don't quite understand like why a guy even has to go when he comes to the bench. You see this in NBA games, and then he puts on a mask. You're just breathing on a guy playing man-to-man defense in his face or blocking his shot, and then you go to the sideline, you got to put a mask on. So we've been down that road too many times, unfortunately. But just monitoring that and governing is not the right word, but just keep an eye on that during a football game and what's the word I'm looking for, John? Is not governing, but just enforcing that, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. Enforcing that during a high school football game, come on, stop already.
You know, and again, it's not supported by any science or any data. We've had 38 states that have played football at this point throughout the country. I think the majority of that, there might be one that's not going to play this year. I'm trying to think which state it is. Even California, I think, is actually playing. And we've had ample, you know, time if playing football without a mask, and those states were not wearing masks, I believe they were not, while they were actually playing on the sideline, you got to throw the mask on again. We would hear of stories of you know, spikes in cases and those types of things, because the mainstream media would be all over that kind of stuff because they're looking for those types of stories. We haven't heard of those types of stories. So, but I think in Sam's case, and I want to give him credit for coming on and answering some of our questions, Joe, about you know, again, is the IHSA, what is their role in this? Are they advocating for the student athlete, which you and I know that they do, right? That is their mission. We believe that they do. You can criticize how much they do it or how they go about that. I've certainly been critical of that over the last several months. But they are thinking the same things that you and I are thinking and that parents and coaches are thinking. And that is good to know that Sam is asking the same questions. Like, you've got to be kidding me about these masks. I'm sure he's not addressing it to that with the IDPH people, but it's more like, hey, these are things that need to be discussed and we need answers on. And the 50 spectator limit, again, outdoor sport. You've got football teams, they'll have more than 50 athletes on it. So how are you going to allocate 50 people to come to a football stadium? You hope that here in the coming weeks that these will be addressed and you'll get answers for, but we know the timeline doesn't always match up, as Sam mentioned, when they have to make these decisions. So again, they plan, have to pull back and have to retreat and then replan. But I guess, Joe, if we're looking at this thing, you know, glass half full, football is going to start next week. As if everything goes, we'll have games here in a couple of weeks. And we got basketball for at least a couple more weeks here, which is, again, that's dual emotions there, because it seems like it just started, and now it's kind of a race to the finish.
Well, and regarding football, thank God we've had this quote unquote heat wave this week here in Illinois, really around the country, because now we're getting, I'm not so much concerned about the snow, getting the snow off the field. We got plows, we got machinery, we can do that. You got shovels, you can get the snow off the field, but that ground is rock hard. People forget, like, you know, 2-3 months of just, you know, freezing temperatures, that field, even turf fields, that's going to be like being on ice. So we've really needed this thaw, and let's hope it just continues to be above freezing here, sun out, and that'll really expedite things as far as getting fields ready. Because otherwise, I'm telling you, John, if this weather would have persisted, especially this below, you know, freezing temperatures, we would have had a lot of separated shoulders. I don't care what kind of pad you got on, that would have not been good. So to think that we would have, you know, back what in the fall, whatever it was that we're talking about starting football in mid-February. A couple weeks ago now on the calendar, that wouldn't have been good. We would have had to push it back because of the weather. Forget about the COVID concern. So fortunately, again, the weather has cooperated here at least the last handful of days here.
Yeah, or you just would have seen a lot of indoor practices. I mean, even if they kept it to that particular date, you'd have seen teams have to be indoors. And then we know there are some schools that are more – aligned to be able to do that in terms of space and that sort of thing. And again, that's the one thing, if you talk to the coaches about the concerns about the spread at this point, specifically with football, because you've got larger number of kids, or some of these programs, you've got 100, 150 kids throughout the under levels and through the varsity. Again, it's not the actual act of playing football. We know at this point, science and data supports, and there's been studies now that show that's not a super spreader event. There's something called viral load, which epidemiologists would also talk to you about in regards to the spreading of that of the virus during the actual playing of the sport. It's the off the field activities. It's meeting rooms. It's sitting in classrooms watching film, being able to separate kids. And the coaches will work through that. They will minimize that. And now with huddle, you know, kids on their you know, iPads or smartphones can watch film. But it's also continuing to be diligent about all the social things that are around football. It's the Tuesday night pizza parties. It's the Thursday night linemen who get together at a buddy's house, and, you know, sure, the mom makes a pot of lasagna, right? Those are the things you really can't do now, or you have to really be very restrictive in terms of what's allowed. But that's also the challenge for these coaches, because the whole point of playing that sport is that social aspect of it. So how do you recreate that or engineer that without the actual event, and make it a good experience, you know, for the kids? So we know, Joe, we're lucky. They're great coaches up here in Lake County, McHenry County, where you are, in Northern Cook County, and Duquesne, DuPage, where our audience is. They'll figure these things out.
Yes.
But man, let's get this public health thing straightened out, Joe. Get some common sense into this.
Absolutely. Let's get outside. The weather's finally cooperating. Yep. But you're right. The coaches, we know, we talk to them every week. They're smart. They'll figure things out. You can take away 10 things, leave them one thing that they can do, and they'll figure it out and make it a positive experience. We know too many coaches that are, you know, will be resourceful and figure things out and make it a positive experience as best as they can. And then we'll play the game. And that's probably, like I said, John, that's probably the least concerning thing. They'll figure it out, even if they're making a lot of mistakes week one and too many flags and all that kind of stuff, and lack of execution. They'd probably rather be talking about that stuff than all the other stuff. So anyway, great guest here today with Sam Knox. John, he was wonderful and very transparent and gave some fabulous answers to our questions, I thought.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's going to do it for today. Again, want to thank our guest, Sam Knox of the Illinois High School Association. We'll be back next week with another episode of the John and Joe Show. We'll be talking probably back to basketball next week. Again, we're taping this on February 24th. There's basically 2.5 weeks left in the basketball season. Our North Suburban Conference will do a kind of a conference jamboree type tournament over the last couple of days. We'll be talking about that a little bit. And then certainly with football starting here, we'll have a few guests on here certainly to talk about the kicking off of the spring football season here in Illinois. But for Joe, I am John. Again, we'll be back next week. Say goodbye, Joe.
See ya.